Welcome to the Creating Us podcast, hosted by the Office of Leader and Culture Development. I'm Jason.
And I'm Shelby.
And we're excited to be with you as we go on a journey across the Texas Tech University system. All right, here we go. Shelby, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I'm just coming back from vacation, and any time where you get to take a week where you can be out on a boat on a lake by yourself, that is a win across the board. So I am doing great, and I'm excited to be back as we have so many great things that are coming up. How about you? Can you match that, Shelby?
I cannot. I was at work all last week, so
that's great too, right?
Yes.
Wonderful. So, hey, we're going to continue our journey across the system. And who are we going to be talking with today, or what are we doing today?
So we have the great pleasure to have our Chancellor, Ted Mitchell, on with us. We are so excited to bring this great leader and learn more about him and what role he has and different things about his leadership.
Wonderful. So yes, Chancellor Mitchell, thank you so much for fitting us in. Really excited as we've been talking with other leaders across the system to be able to have you on is really just so excited. So we'll just start off real quick, Chancellor Mitchell, and tell us a little bit about yourself and what is it that we should know about you?
Yeah, boy. Well, first of all, Jason and Shelby, thanks for having me on. I have a question before we start into that. Why, Jason, were you on a boat on a lake by yourself? You weren't really by yourself. Really? You were by yourself? You weren't with your family?
No.
Oh, Lordy. Okay. All right. Well, I need to make that tells me a lot about you. That's great. You wanted some solitude.
He needed some time away.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you for trying to save me there, Shelby.
Well, thanks for having me on here. So I think most folks know in our system that that I'm an East Texas boy. I grew up on the other side of the state. So as a kid growing up, when you think about Texas Tech University, the Health Sciences Center and the like, from East Texas, all I really thought about was a university and a university, it wasn't even a system at the time, but a university that was just far away. Didn't think about Texas Tech, good, bad, indifferent. I did know that friends of mine that came out here to go to school, they all, to a person, they absolutely loved their experience here. And so when Janet and I first took the job at the Health Sciences Center back in 2010, I guess it should have been no surprise to me why it was that that was the case with these friends of mine that had come to school out here. The folks out here are tremendous. The state of Texas is tremendous in general about a warmth that the people have, but West Texas is like the state of Texas on steroids when it comes to hospitality, when it comes to this can-do attitude about getting things done, when it comes to the grit of the people that are out here. It's one of those things that was not just heartwarming when we started, but it was very telltale about the type of career we would have out here.
You know, I can only vouch for that being somebody who's a transplant. Born and raised in Minnesota, I was always taught about Minnesota nice and how, you know, people are just overly nice and all of that. But 4 years ago, when we moved down here, my wife, my kids and I, we moved down here, it really was like, wow, what is this place? And Minnesota nice has nothing on West Texas, and we have absolutely loved it. So again, there's just something really special about this area, and I think pride and the care and the community that we have here.
You better believe it.
Yep. And, you know, I come from Austin, the Austin area, Round Rock specifically. And so I can also vouch that this is a special area. I love it here. So,
So I want to dive in because I want to go back to really when I was fortunate enough to be brought on board and over at the Health Sciences Center when you were president over there. And we had one of the first things that I was asked to do was the One Team Fellows program. And, you know, my role in what our office does is to build these development programs for our team members because you have a vision and you have a desire of where you know, we don't want to just develop today's leaders. We want to be able to develop that next generation. Can you share a little bit more about that and your vision with them?
Sure. So if you look at what it is that we do, and somebody asked me this many, many months ago before the legislative session started, somebody said to me, hey, how's the higher education business? And my response was, well, we're not in the higher education business. We're in the people development business, and higher education is just the tool that we have to do that. And I really do believe that, because to your point, Jason, when we talk about things like the One Team Fellows program at the Health Sciences Center, when we talk about faculty development and staff development, things of that nature, ultimately the goal is to create an environment in all five of our universities, an environment that will be developing people as they come through. Now, that will be the students that are coming through here that are being impacted by it, because you've got to have the right type of environment that you want in order to create the type of environment for the student leaders that you want to develop. But it's also then for the development of the staff that we have and the faculty that we have within our university system. And so you start, if your goal is to transform the lives of the students coming through so that they in turn can transform the lives of the communities that they will eventually wind up in, then you have to make sure that the environment that they're going to be coming through is focused on doing that. And it's really kind of interesting, because if you talk about leadership in general, a lot of people, when they think of leadership, they think of either like military leadership, or they think of leadership in sports, whatever it may be. But leadership can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. It can be the mom or dad that are just highly involved in their communities. And whether it's with the PTA, or whether it's this, a local school board, whether it's with the local church club, or whatever it may be, there's leadership there. There's leadership within a family, how you're working within the confines of your own family. So leadership itself means different things to different people. So creating an environment where we're not just dumping information about job readiness into people as they come through, but we're really trying to create an environment that the folks that are coming through are transformed by the environment they're in. And that's a hard thing to do. That's not something that you do from one year to the next. That's something that takes many, many years to develop it. But I think, well, I don't think this, I know this, it can be done. And there are certain places around the country in higher education that we know have done it historically. And I, you know, people hear me speak specifically about the military academies, West Point, Annapolis, and the Air Force Academy. We all know that when you are working in a company someplace, anywhere around the country, if you're in charge of reviewing applicants for an open position, if you get an applicant that went to one of those academies, then, you know, sight unseen, there will be something special about that young man or young woman. Mm-hmm. And so the idea behind it then is, say, okay, what can we do? What can we do so that 20 years from now, if you've got parents sitting in their home in Dallas or Fort Worth, or sitting in their home in Minnesota, that they can look at this, so look, there's something different about those students that graduate from that Texas Tech University system. And I want my child to be part of that. And while that is a tall order, I certainly believe that it's one that we can accomplish. And it just takes a lot of work on the front end with folks, actually, with folks like you, with the work that you guys do, not just here at the system administration, but that you do throughout our system. And it's how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yeah. And when's the best time to plant a tree?
That's right. There's two good times to plant a tree, 20 years ago and today. So we're planting it today.
Yes. Well, go ahead, Jason.
No, please.
Well, as we, you were talking about, you know, leadership and those that are influencing your leadership and your role, who has been an influence on you and your style?
Well, I had a lot of folks that influenced me growing up for various reasons. My father was always a big influence on me. And if there was a character trait that I would attribute to my dad, it was perseverance. My dad was somebody who always just worked harder. And he said all the time, hard work never killed anybody. I mean, he said that a million times to my siblings and I, but he was always persevere. You just keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. And you will eventually succeed doing something. My mother was all about family, and everything that she did, the sacrifices that she made were always for us, for everybody but herself. So selflessness was something that I always took from my mother. Her father, my grandfather, is the only grandfather I ever knew, but he was kind of the pillar of integrity. He was a school superintendent in Louisiana, and I didn't realize this as a kid, but if you just mentioned his name around that community over there, it was always going to get you probably a little bit extra attention. And I didn't know why that was at the time, but later on, you really figured that out. So there were a lot of people when I was a kid growing up that influenced me like that. Professionally, when I started working in Dallas at a place called the Cooper Clinic, Kenneth Cooper was a professional mentor for me. And I will say that also, if you looked at a lot of the patients that I wound up seeing, these were a lot of folks that were business tycoons and the like. And I'll give you a great example. Ray Hunt was someone that really influenced me as a leader. He was a patient of mine in Dallas. And when I first became the CEO of the Cooper Clinic, Ray was one of the first ones that called me and said, "Hey, listen, I'd like you to come over and let's chit chat. And I can give you hopefully some of my wisdom that I've gleaned from business over the decades to help with you." So I had several people along the way. I was always in a position where, for whatever reason, when I needed help from a mentor along the way, there always seemed to be somebody available that was willing to step up and really help me with the things I was trying to accomplish.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. I love that answer.
As I listen to what you're saying, you know, going from your childhood all the way up into your professional, I'm hearing consistent themes such as service and influence, integrity, you know, professionalism, that hard work. When we think about, and back to our earlier conversation around, you know, leadership is, you know, it's not just something you can say, boom, you know, you're a leader. It takes time. It takes practice. One of the methods or styles of leadership that we talk a lot about, something I'm very passionate about, is the impact of servant leadership and what that can do within an organization. As somebody who studied it within teams for many years, I've seen so many positives. And now to work within an organization and really a system that talks about it, that believes in it, and that sees the value of relationships. How do you see this style within a higher ed environment, or, you know, really just the work you're doing? How do you see this style really moving us forward?
Well, I'll say, Jason, with that, you know, as you know, my background is in medicine. And one of the things that I always loved about medicine was the ability you had to influence the lives of folks around you. Now, when you talk about leadership specifically, I love John Maxwell's book, The Five Levels of Leadership, and it's the whole thing about influence versus authority. And authority, if you just use that as your leadership style, you have to do what I tell you to do because I'm your boss. Or in medicine, you have to do what I tell you to do because I'm your doctor. That doesn't get very far. I found very, very early on, that if you want to get the most out of folks, you work with influence, that I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you accomplish things for you, not for me. And by doing so, you establish a relationship with them. It's great. I will tell you a very quick story. When I was a chief medical resident at the University of Texas Medical Branch, I used to round every day with either the cardiology team or the ICU, the pulmonary critical care team. And I was making rounds one day with one of the cardiology fellows, a fellow that's very, very bright, but I'll just say his emotional intelligence probably needed work. So we were rounding, and a consult had come in overnight from family medicine. There was a woman that was sick. She was in the hospital. Family medicine had her in, and they found that she had a murmur. And so they consulted cardiology. So we walked in. I walked in with a fellow, and he introduced himself. I'm Dr. So-and-so. Your doctors have asked us to come in because you have a heart murmur and want to let you know that we have an echocardiogram scheduled for you at 10 o'clock this morning. And that's about the way he said it. And of course, you could tell with this woman that, number one, she was obviously unaware that cardiology had been consulted. Number two, she had no clue as to what was going on. And number three, this was very disconcerting to her. Mm-hmm. So that was a conversation we had. And we walked back out. I would have said something to him at the moment, except I knew that Dr. Jack Wallace was going to be coming in. Now, Dr. Wallace was the faculty member, and Dr. Wallace was absolutely the epitome of what you would think the best stereotype of a physician you could ever imagine. His interpersonal skills were just the best. So anyway, Dr. Wallace walked up and said, so tell me what's going on. And the fellow said, well, Dr. Wallace, we have Ms. So-and-so here in room such and such, and she has a murmur. Family medicine consulted us to do an evaluation. So we have an echo scheduled at 10. And Dr. Wallace looked at the fellow and said, well, wait a minute. He says, what's her complaint? And the fellow's face just went white. And he said, well, Dr. Wallace, I don't actually know. And he said, well, let me just tell you something. If you'll just shut up and listen, the patient will actually tell you what's wrong with them. Mm-hmm. So we walked back in with Dr. Wallace, and Dr. Wallace said, hi, Ms. So-and-so. My name's Jack Wallace. Not Dr. Wallace. My name's Jack Wallace. I'm one of the heart doctors here. He said, where are you from? And she goes, oh, I'm from Victoria. He goes, oh, you're from Victoria. He goes, do you know so-and-so? And she said, well, in fact, I do. And he said, you know, she makes the best pecan pies I think I've ever eaten. So they're having this little conversation the whole time that he's examining her and listening to her. And about the same amount of time that we were in there, but the interaction was 180 degrees different. So after he finished examining her and had this conversation, he goes, well, let me tell you something, Ms. So-and-so. What you have is a condition called mitral valve prolapse. You don't need to remember that. It's a very simple thing. It's very minor. It doesn't mean anything. You don't need an echocardiogram. You don't need any of that. I'll tell your doctors that your heart's fine. And you make sure to tell Ms. So-and-so that I said hello next time you see her. Then we walked out. So then he turned to the fellow and said, let me tell you something. She's got mitral valve prolapse. If you as a cardiologist need to get an echo to figure that out, you need more training. So, but the point being for me was seeing the same interaction between two physicians, one of whom was going in to serve the patient, the other of whom was going in to get something done, get his work done. And the difference was all the difference in the world. So from that day forward, every time I've ever seen a patient, ever, any patient I've ever said, that I've ever seen, my first thing to say to them was, where are you from? And you can just watch the tension just melt when you say that, because when patients are coming in to see you, they're on edge about things. And so that's a way to help. It's a way to just help put yourself on an even footing with them. And by the same token, I've used that for the most part when I meet people in general now. Hey, where are you from? What do you do? And it breaks down barriers almost immediately. So the idea, the concept of servant leadership for me, about using, trying to, by, through a relationship with somebody, trying to influence things that you're trying to get done, rather than using an authoritarian approach where you're dictating to somebody the things that you want to get done. So anyway, it's a long-winded way of saying it's something that has been part of, it's the only way I know how to lead, is by trying to help people get things done that they want to get done.
When I think about servant leadership and I'm introducing it, whether it be to a team or a leader, I go back to Robert Greenleaf and his question, his best test that he asks. And he says, do those served grow as persons? Do they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? And the essence of that question is about the relationship. It's about the influence. It's about how can we create a space where we can develop and support and empower others. And so much of what you were just saying there has, you know, so many connections that I just, again, greatly appreciate that story. And I think it drives home what we mean when we talk about servant leadership, is that it's about the person. It's about the relationship.
Well, and with that relationship, you know, in medicine, one of the first phrases you learn is the Latin phrase primum non nocere, first do no harm. Mm-hmm. So anytime, whether it's a patient interaction, whether it's an interaction with a colleague, whatever it may be, people need to understand there is no such thing as a neutral interaction. You're either going to have a positive or a negative interaction. And if you always keep in mind, your first goal is to do no harm. Then that's a great approach, whether you're talking about patients, whether you're talking about friends, family, colleagues, coworkers, whatever it may be. The first thing is try not to do something to harm somebody. You know, it was Socrates that talked about the siphon of the three questions when he was approached saying, hey, did you know one of your students is saying this or this? He goes, well, before you tell me that, number one, is what you're about to tell me true? Number two, is what you're about to tell me necessary? And number three, is what you're about to tell me kind? So if it's not true, I don't need to hear about it. If it's not necessary, I don't need to hear about it. And if it's not kind, I don't need to hear about it either. And so if you take that kind of an approach from a leadership perspective, we all love gossip and we all want to hear those things, but it's just one of those things that you got to be very careful about that, because that's where a lot of mistrust winds up being spawned, is through gossip and other things. And so I think that if you'll always take that approach, and it's something that someone's going to tell you about someone else, is it true, is it necessary, and is it kind, then I think we'll all be a lot better off for it.
So Chancellor Mitchell, when, as you think about, and as we kind of bring our time together to a close here, where do you want... Let me actually back up. I don't want to ask that question. What do you want others to take away from this? If you could share any advice or guidance, what would that be?
It would be this. If you looked at our various universities, if you looked at all the entities within the Texas Tech system that have gone through values journeys, where they have distilled onto paper the most important values that they want to live by, what the definitions of those values are, and what the behaviors are that they expect from the definitions of those values. If people would take that to heart, and I've said this from the very beginning as we started values journeys, if you would live by those values, just a handful of them, then we would not need a single policy. We would not need a single policy for any university that we have, if people just live by their values. It's interesting, if you want to look at this from a biblical perspective, you know, there were just 10 commandments, not 500, not 800, just 10 simple rules, 10 simple things to live by. And I think that speaks a lot about human nature in general. You can distill things down to specific values and you'll just live by those. You don't need books of policies and procedures.
I agree completely, and I love it. Shelby, final thoughts.
I just want to thank you, Chancellor Mitchell, for, you know, coming on here. And I have enjoyed getting to hear more about your leadership style and just learn a little bit more about you. It's been really nice.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys very much for having me on here.
Wonderful. And as always, we're going to continue our journey by interviewing even more fantastic leaders that we have. Again, we are so fortunate to be able to have the leaders that we have and work with the people that we do. So continue to stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast for all of the latest interviews and all of the latest episodes that we release. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Creating Us podcast. If you have any comments or questions, please let me know at jason.weber@ttu.edu. Until next time, I'm Jason.
And I'm Shelby.
Take care.